Good evening and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we're happy to present a program on landlord-tenant law. The last time we ran this program, we were, and still are, looking at a massive budget surplus. The governor and legislature found money to help more folks in the offing. But these funds, earmarked for COVID-related rental assistance, remain largely undistributed. In fact, tenants are getting rejections without notice and reasons. Lawsuits have been filed about both these rejections and the failure to distribute the money. Where we left off, it was not entirely as clear whether the state pandemic moratorium on evictions due to residential non-payment of rent has ended. Has the state completely withdrawn from the landlord-tenant arena? It seems that some local cities and counties have enacted some form of rent control or eviction moratoriums. Has that trend continued? For landlords, if you are looking at property in one of those areas, what remedies might be available to you other than eviction? Waiver of rent, payment plans, small claims cases? How would this affect tenants? Just where does all this leave us? In short, where are we now? There's a lot going on, a lot to talk about with just the right guests. Joining us tonight, for some 20 years, San Francisco landlord-tenant attorney Jessica Chalik represents clients in rent board actions, mediations, and court for landlord-tenant issues. Jessica launched her practice to specialize in San Francisco residential evictions, vacancy agreements, and rent board petitions for tenants, landlords, master tenants, and subtenants. San Mateo attorney David Finkelstein, a graduate of the NYU School of Law. David is admitted to practice in the states of California and New York, beginning his career as staff attorney in California for the National Housing Law Project at Bolt Hall Law School, now Berkeley Law School. David has been representing clients in real estate and landlord-tenant matters for some 40 years. David has published articles about protection for renters during the COVID-19 crisis. Also joining us tonight is San Francisco attorney Salvatore Timpano. Sal is considered one of the top attorneys in the Bay Area to practice in the area of landlord-tenant law, representing both landlords and tenants in the area of eviction. And with that, Sal, David, Jessica, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Jeff, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Jeff.
So we're talking before going on the air about the eviction moratorium. It appears that was not extended, and some of these relief funds remain undistributed. And in fact, people are getting some rejections that they just don't understand. So let's start. What's going on with all that?
Well, Jeff, generally what's happened is, you know, when we last spoke in May, the eviction moratorium for COVID-related residential rent debt was coming up at the end of June. Applications were due in by the end of March, and then, you know, it had been extended to the end of June for distribution of the funds. As that time came, we realized the state has not distributed all of the funds, but there was no move by the legislature to extend that time frame. So now we're in an area where not all of the rent relief funds have been distributed. And in fact, I was reading an article recently that said that, you know, a lot of it still is unreviewed for the first time. The state is saying they've helped a lot of people, but people who have not received the help are also getting rejection letters. And there's a lot of tenant organizations protesting and filing lawsuits about the fact that the rejection letters have no reasons, and the and there's no way to appeal it in time. People don't get notice in enough time. So it's a difficult situation.
Sounds troublesome. What are some of the other remedies people might look to? Well, we'll get to that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Where do we want to go with this? The remedies?
Obviously, there's a lot to talk about tonight, And here's your opportunity to get in on the conversation and ask us your questions. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside the local dialing area, call us toll free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Bear in mind that our attorney guests can't provide you precise legal advice on your case because they don't have all the facts relating to your case. But we're all here happy to pass along legal principles to help you in your decision making. And their guidance might not be the positions of their employers or their clients, but they're all here. They're happy to help. Our phone number again, 415-841-4134, or toll free at 866-798-8255. Has the state withdrawn pretty much from the landlord-tenant arena?
I would say that, there is the Tenant Protection Act of 2019, which created statewide rent control with certain exemptions like single family units and housing that was built within the last 15 years. That's still in effect. But otherwise, yes, all the moratoriums from the state are finished. The only moratorium in the Bay Area that I'm aware of is a very strict one in Alameda County that covers all of Alameda County, that there is an eviction moratorium until 60 days after expiration of the local health emergency relating to the pandemic, and that's not been lifted in Alameda County. So there's a moratorium there, and my understanding actually from Jessica here is that that's been challenged by a federal court action in the Northern District of California, but it's still in effect until that case is decided.
And David, the one other area of state involvement that we had talked about before going on air was the governor's rent cap, right? That where rents are capped at 10%, even for these otherwise exempt properties, which you identified as single family homes and residential properties built within the last 15 years. And I think that covers the state involvement at this point. I think that covers everything. Jessica, do you have anything else? Did we miss anything from our earlier discussion?
No, I don't think so. Not at a state level. The state COVID emergency is still in place. And so that the governor still has his ability to, do executive orders if he needs to until he lifts the state of emergency. And as you just were talking about, under the state of emergency, there's a anti-price gouging law that affects most supplies and including housing. And that's the 10% we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you know, does the rent cap include vacant properties?
I don't think it would. I don't know directly. Maybe David or Jessica know, but the vacant properties in California don't have any. There's no vacancy rent control, so they would just go up for whatever the market provides, and then they'd become part of whatever rent control scheme applies.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
I'm sorry, David. I said
I would agree. I agree.
Yes. The statewide rent control kicks in after the tenant has been in the unit a year. And it also, there's also eviction control there as well.
Let me turn it over to Anne from Fairfield. Anne, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Yes, I rented a two-bedroom, and now that my income's lower because I'm in the restaurant business, I want a roommate to move in. And my landlord is telling me I can't do that. What are my rights to have a roommate?
Well, Anne, unless there's some local rent control in Fairfield, and I'm not sure if there is, either at the city or the county level. It would be controlled by your rental agreement. So do you have a written rental agreement?
Yes. Okay. But it's so, silent on that issue.
It usually would say how many occupants. Almost every written agreement I have seen would say number of occupants, 1, 2, 3, and so
on. Right. Yeah, it was just me, you know, because I thought I could, you know, afford it by myself. But now I want to add a roommate. Do I have any legal right to that?
Well, if your written rental agreement does not specify a number of occupants and does not address subletting at all, then it's allowed, generally. I would talk to a lawyer in your areas.
Okay.
You know, to make
Did
sure
you
that,
say
that
federally?
Generally.
Did you say, oh, generally.
Generally.
Okay. Okay, great.
Not
okay,
federally.
Thank
no.
you very much.
Generally. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I will contact someone. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Anne. Thank you for joining us in your legal rights. One of the things that we started talking about was the Alameda County moratorium and the fact that that's being challenged. Does anybody want to go into that discussion a little more deeply? One of the things I noticed, for example, is that that challenge appears to be made as a civil rights violation under the Ku Klux Klan Act, which is kind of an unusual application. Is anybody really familiar with the challenge that's pending now before the Northern District?
I'm not familiar with it, but I think that's sort of an innovative theory. My guess is that was a way or a lever to get federal jurisdiction and maybe to appeal it all the way up to even the Supreme Court based on a federal statute violation. But that's just my guess.
No, I'm not really that familiar with the litigation.
Well, maybe not the litigation, but you guys are intimately familiar with the legislation. So let's move on a little bit. We briefly touched on the California Tenant Protection Act of 2019. What exactly does this do? And the real question that was posed last time is if this is tantamount to slowly socializing the market for rental housing.
Well, I mean, what it does is it brings all rental properties in California, all residential rental properties with two exceptions that David mentioned earlier, under rent control and eviction control. So the housing that was previously not protected is now part of the state scheme, and landlords and tenants are going to be governed by it. So even though those new rules, what I want to say is those new rules now require landlords to have a reason or a just cause that's reflected in the statute in order to begin eviction proceedings. They can no longer use a 30-day notice or a 60-day notice to evict without any reason. They have to have a reason that's provided within the statute. They can only use those other two eviction notices if the property is exempt from the rent control scheme or eviction control from the Tenant Protection Act.
Yes, and there are, I wouldn't call it socialistic myself because it does give a broad amount of exemptions and also just cause eviction. We said single families are exempt, and also if it's less than 15 years old, it's exempt. But also for just cause, I mean, there are just causes if the owner wants to move in or even take it off the market. Or even And I've used this for some of my clients. If there is a material renovation of the unit that would take longer than 30 days, and you're allowed to give a 60-day notice to evict, and there's certain other things you have to credit the last month's rent. But I think this is all fair, and I'm mostly representing landlords in this matter, and not many of them are complaining about this. So it's not taking their properties in any fair sense of the meaning.
And another exemption is if the locale already has rent control, like San Francisco and Oakland and Berkeley, their rent control actually predates the 2019 statewide law. So that is respected.
So now that we've been working with it for a while, how does it work with some of the local rent controls?
Well, as I just said, the local rent controls generally provide more protection. And if they do, then that is honored. There are certain areas where there's a few cities in California where they've not put in rent control so much as they've put in a requirement for mediation between landlords or something like that, that is administered locally. If it doesn't extend to actual rent control or eviction control, then the statewide principles apply.
Now, Jessica and David, would you guys agree that the Tenant Protection Act, in answer to Jeff's question, doesn't really affect San Francisco because our ordinance is it covers more than the Tenant Protection Act, including everything that's in the Tenant Protection Act on its own. So we don't need it here in San Francisco. Is that, you guys
correct.
Agree with that?
And other,
yes.
Other, I agree. And, you know, other places that have comprehensive rent control and eviction control, like Berkeley and Oakland, particularly mm-hmm. in the Bay Area. And I think East Palo also has some rent control.
Other cities like Redwood City, for example, has a very burdensome relocation fee program, so that even if you have just cause, you have to pay under certain circumstances three times what it's not what the actual rent is, but three times what an average rent is deemed in the state. And that could be $11,000-$12,000 or more that you have to pay to relocate, and so that's. I've had several landlord clients who are objecting to that. That's added on to whatever the state requirements are. Yeah.
So, David, is that? Is that relocation in Redwood City, is that only for tenant no fault or evictions, or is it tenant fault evictions as well?
I believe it's not going to be tenant fault. It has to be no fault on the tenant. But if it's otherwise justified, like remodeling, for example, that I mentioned, so I have landlords who, you know, they want to rip out the kitchen and the bathroom and so on, and the floors, and it's all legitimate what they're doing. That it takes, you know, like 90 days to do the remodeling. But in addition to the 60-day notice and I think the last month's rent free, they also have to pay a relocation fee, sometimes three times the amount of rent. So that's a pretty hefty penalty that they're paying.
Do we know if that's being challenged?
Not to my knowledge.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight we're talking landlord-tenant. What's appears to be the state withdrawing from the eviction arena. Where do landlords and tenants stand today? Tonight's guests, David Finkelstein, Sal Timpano, and Jessica Chilett, are among the best landlord-tenant attorneys in the region. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You don't have to jump into the exact same point we may be in our conversation. One of the things I remember discussing previously that changed with the Tenant Protection Act are the notice requirements. Now we've had a bit of time to understand all these notices that at first seemed to be a trap for the unwary. Seems like there's been a bit of a shakedown, or shaking out, rather, of what these are. What kind of notices are tenants required to receive with a new lease, for example?
Well, Jeff, is if it is a single family home and it's currently going to be rented out at market, the tenants under the Tenant Protection Act are entitled to receive notice that that particular property is exempted from the state rent control protections. If they don't receive it, then that property is within the state rent control protections, the Tenant Protection Act of 2019. So that's one notice that tenants are entitled to when renting a single family home.
Yes, and a lot of moms and pops aren't aware of that, and they don't use car forms. CAR is a California Association of Realtors, which has that automatically in it, but instead they go online or they try to use something they print out online that's not even relevant to California, and they use that, and they sort of mess themselves up by doing that. I've seen that quite often.
Yeah,
yes, I had some inquiries recently about drafting up leases for San Francisco, and one of the people, what they provided me was something from the internet, and it was actually from 2005 and not San Francisco compliant even then. And so, I had to point that out to them.
So if you download a current form standardized in the locale with which you'll be working, does that pretty much protect you and have all these notices built in?
Well, I'm not so sure it would, Jeff. Yeah, go ahead, Jessica.
It depends. Well, if it's a California Apartment of Realtors form, like David mentioned a moment ago, or a California Apartment Association has forms for its members, which are landlords who rent in California, if they have up-to-date forms. In San Francisco, the San Francisco Apartment Association updates their form every year to comply with the local ordinance. So it's possible to obtain proper updated forms. You just have to make sure that that's what you're looking at.
I agree. And if it were me, I would still probably want to have an attorney look at it just to make sure, that the language is in there. Just because, if the landlord gets the CAR form or the California Association of Realtor forms and they don't confirm it for themselves, maybe they got an old form. I even if the date's on there, I think they should still check it. And if they're not comfortable checking it, probably just have an attorney look at it.
Yeah. And yeah. I'm sorry, David, go ahead.
I've had that happen recently. I generally tell my clients if they want me to send them a CAR form or whatever, one of these other forms, I will send it to them. And if they're my regular clients, I don't even charge, because I said I don't charge for sending out paper forms. But if they want me to review it and to see if it was done properly, or if they want me to do it, then I charge my hourly fee. And I'd say more than half, probably three quarters of the people I'm talking to will say, oh, yeah, we want you to do it or we want you to review it. So I do recommend having an attorney review it.
Yeah.
And what about before an eviction can move forward? What types of forms are now required there?
Well, if we're still talking COVID-related rent debt, which is possible, there's the notices are 15-day notices to pay or quit. And there's all sorts of disclosures that need to be attached to them that are state forms.
Is that 15 days where it used to be a 3-day notice to pay, rent, or quit? Now it's 15?
That's right. That's right. And it doesn't count weekends or holidays, traditional holidays either. So if you have, you know, for example, if it's over a long holiday weekend, you know, you lose 3 days and you're count there. So when it comes Christmas time or Thanksgiving time, when you have 4-day weekends, then you lose those days as well.
And what entity, if any, is actually looking at these things and enforcing? Is it just a question of whether you'll get the support from the court when you get there? Or is there somebody actively monitoring?
The defense lawyers are going to be monitoring it. So if the tenant doesn't respond, then it'll probably go unnoticed. But if the tenant responds by way of an attorney, the defense lawyer will you know, point that out.
Absolutely. There's not a city or local or state agency that reviews filings for those kinds of violations.
I know within the court structures themselves, there's a lot of arenas where they have somebody helping people that are self-represented, whether it's in family law or small claims, for example. Do they have anything comparable in landlord-tenant?
Oh, absolutely. Well,
you sure? Go ahead, Jessica.
Oh, I was just going to say the courts in San Francisco, and actually every state trial court, is supposed to have a self-help center or access to self-help.
Yeah, and in San Francisco, most tenants are going to get access to legal counsel, you know, free legal counsel. So those counsel are going to know, you know, how to, you know, look at an eviction notice, or at least generally look at the eviction notice.
It's the same in all the other Bay Area counties, Alameda, San Mateo, Santa Clara. They all have some form of free legal aid actually stationed in the courtroom.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area, where tonight we're talking about landlord-tenant law, what's left in the eviction arena, where do landlords and tenants stand today. Tonight's guests are David Finkelstein, Sal Timpano, and Jessica Chalik. All are among the best landlord-tenant attorneys in the region. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Again, as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic, and of course, that's landlord-tenant law. You're not limited to where we may be in our conversation here on Your Legal Rights. Well, we'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org. for more information.
Let me turn it over to Eric from San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hey, thanks for taking my call. Quick question. So on the disclaimer that you have to announce that, you know, the property is or is 1482, the Tenant Protection Act, what if you, as a landlord, make a mistake? Do you get a mulligan? Do you get to go back? When do you get to go back? Is that the end of the lease? Can you renegotiate? Or what's the recourse for a landlord if they make a mistake?
So we cut out part of the time, but I think the gist of it is, if your notice is incomplete and you're acting in good faith, Is there some remedy? Is there some way to fix it? Or is Eric forever locked in, or those that he's speaking for forever locked in to a rent control unit, but may not have otherwise been rent control?
Exactly.
Was the question specifically on the notice that needs to be applied for exempt properties, that needs to be served for exempt properties? Is that the...
This is David. I think that's what he was referring to. And I've told my clients that, you know, for example, if it's a one-year lease, that they can present a new lease which has the proper exemption form at the end to renew. And, of course, I can't guarantee, no attorney's going to guarantee, but that's what I recommend doing. I don't know about you, Sal.
That's interesting. I haven't tried it, and I took the easy way out, David. I just said, like, if you didn't send it, you can't send the notice because you're late. But I like your theory on sending it at the end of the term, you know, serving that notice. But I haven't tried that. But I think it's a good try. You know, there's no guarantee.
I wasn't talking about sending the notice. I was talking about having them sign a new form that had the notice in the lease.
Even better. Although, because it's the rub is it's an existing tenancy that's going to be renewed. It's the same tenant, same property. Is it going to work? I like it because it's better than nothing. And most landlords, if not all, barely short of all landlords, did not know that there was a way to exempt these properties and that there was a condition that you had to meet to exempt it. So it seems unfair not to allow them to correct it, you know, when they find out.
Mm-hmm.
I like what you're doing with that.
Yes, I do too, you know, because even though San Francisco has something, a provision that says a unilateral change of terms can't be used to evict a tenant if they didn't, you know, a unilaterally improve change of terms from the landlord to the tenant, and the tenant doesn't agree, and therefore it can't be used as a basis for eviction, you know, breach of contract. But if the tenant signs off on a new lease that has that in there, then the tenant has agreed, and so you avoid that situation. So I agree. That's a good way to approach it. As you said, nobody can guarantee anything, but, you know, good way to try.
So, Eric, it sounds like you don't get a do-over until it's time to renew, but you can build it into your renewal.
All right. That sounds great. That's at least an option. I like it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. We talked a little bit about the moratorium on evictions in Alameda County. So suppose you own property in Alameda and you are covered by this moratorium. What other remedies might a landlord have?
In general, as far as evictions go, as far as getting possession of the property, because that's what eviction is about, is getting possession of the property. Right now, there isn't that available. However, as far as recovering rent, debt, or something like that, there are other options. The small claims has been changed. Rules around small claims have been changed. COVID-related rent debt can be pursued in small claims. You won't get an eviction. You won't get possession, but you can do a breach of contract small claims case for payment of the rent. One thing.
Jessica, do you know if the jurisdictional limits apply to those breach of contract rent cases?
They do not. They are specifically exempt from the $10,000 limit.
So if the landlord, for example, has $15,000 in unpaid rent, they can bring their breach of contract case in the small claims court for the $15,000.
Right. The COVID-related rent debt. Know if it applies to all rent debt, you know, because now we're, as of June 30th, you know, July 1st, we're able to do regular non-payment of rent cases or rents that were due July 1st or coming up August 1st.
Except in Alameda County.
Except in Alameda County. So, and the small claims, I just looked at it earlier today. They have a specific series of forms related to the COVID-related rent debt. That's SC for small claims -500 series. So, you know, that would be the forms that you would need to be filing. And the California court's website has basically a step-by-step, you know, how to do that sort of thing in their self-help section for under landlord tenant. So it was just
what about buyouts or buyout agreements? I know in San Francisco, you have to be very careful. You have to give a pre-buyout agreement notice about the tenant's rights. Not sure if that applies in Alameda or not. And so you do have to check that and be careful about it. But that's still available, isn't it, in Alameda? I think so.
Yes, I think it is. I'm not as familiar, but I think it is. And yes, it's available in San Francisco. If you want to do it in San Francisco, you have to do a notice of intent to the tenant and file a declaration with the rent board. The forms are available on the court, on the rent board's website. So that's fairly easy. And vacancy, in San Francisco, they're called vacancy agreements, otherwise known as buyouts, but they're still available. And that's an option. You know, use waiver as rent debt as part of the, you know, money part of it and see what you can work out.
Let me turn it over to Charles in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I live in San Francisco. I've just moved in since April 1st. The landlord in this single-family dwelling, his house in the Hollywood Sunset, has he's divorced and kids grown up, and so he has a place to himself. And he called me through mutual friends who knew I had to move and offered me a storage unit in his the storage space at the back of his garage opening onto his backyard. The rest of the house is upstairs, entered through the garage. Basically, it's a good deal, but I'm interested in finding out what are my rights as far as the utilities that come with the unit go. I can use the washer and dryer, the second bathroom on the door upstairs. But he also is insisting that I consider part of the utilities is cable and Wi-Fi, which I don't need because I have a personal hotspot I've used for 20 years. And I'm wondering if that's something that is okay for him to insist on me adding to the other electricity, water utilities for this kind of a rental in a single family house. But he's the only person here besides me, because his family's all gone.
So a single family house in San Francisco, and you're renting a storeroom?
It's a storage
space. You're planning to live in it?
I'm in it now. I've been there since first month. I've given him $2,500 since April 1st, including the first and last month's rent. And there's no written agreement. He had tried to make one up, but it was deficient because he hadn't actually remembered that I'd given him the first and last month's rent. So I'm not signing that. But he hasn't since, up to this point in July, since April, actually given me a figure beyond the amount for the rent of the storage space as a living space, concrete floor. He hasn't given me a figure for his typical monthly utilities at all, just saying electricity, water, trash, recycling, and but he also is insisting that I, even though I don't use it, have my own facility through a hotspot on my phone. He's insisting that I pay half of his cable internet. which I don't need.
Okay. Well,
Charles, let me ask you a follow-up. I just wasn't clear. Are you talking about him partitioning storage space in the back of the garage as the dwelling unit and no other? Or are you sharing the dwelling in addition to this storage space?
Well, he had, when he was still with his wife and kids, they had a two-story house. They built an extension that went out about, 13 feet and up three stories. So from the garage back, they also extended at that 13 feet, and above it is another room in his on his first main floor. And then he has his own bedroom and bath on the third new extension part. What I have is a concrete floor extension of the garage space on the ground floor that opens onto the back yard.
I'm not even sure that that's a legal space to rent for people to live in.
I'm not clear that it is either. Nor I.
The arrangement is I guess this landlord has done everything wrong. He's he's checked all the wrong boxes. So.
Mm.
And as far as your specific question on utilities, that's usually negotiated before move in as to what utilities are going to be included or additional, and what the, you know, split is going to be. If there was no discussion about it, then, you know, you don't have to pay for anything that you don't use. I mean, as far as that internet, you know.
Well, yeah.
That was not part of the original agreement.
We had no, the only agreement was, he called me, offered me to come to take a look at it. He said, I know it's going to sound crazy, $500 in San Francisco, $500. I jumped on it, gave him, April 1st, $1,000 first and last month's rent, cashier's checks. He'd forgotten about that, tried to write up a rental agreement saying I started for May. I said, but I already paid you for April and last month's rent and May. And by the time he'd written that up, it was already June, I paid him for that fee, so I have not missed the $500 payment. I had agreed that it'd be, I would.
That really sounds like a sketchy situation. And you know,
very.
I'd be concerned about that. There's, you know, the Bar Association of San Francisco has a lawyer referral service. Jeff had given the number a few minutes ago. You may want to contact them and, you know, get a half-hour consultation with an attorney.
And I'm glad to give you that number again in a few seconds, but that begs the ultimate question, and that is, what can he do if he raises the issue of the illegal unit? His landlords can and is likely to evict him, but at the same time, he's in a unit that it sounds like may well have some habitability issues secondary to whether it's legal or not.
Yeah, there's no heat. Yeah.
That's against the law. You're not allowed to rent a residence that has no heat, not in California.
He's saying just add in a plug-in heater. It's just with the.
Okay, that doesn't meet the legal requirements.
Right.
No, it doesn't. That's a whole other issue.
Yeah, you might want to. Yeah. It sounds like you need some legal advice, and the lawyer referral and information service of the San Francisco, of the Bar Association of San Francisco, is low cost. They will give you a half-hour consultation for a song. I strongly recommend it. Their number is 415-989-1616.
Okay. All right. Thank you very kindly.
That's a bit more than we can handle today.
Yeah, I can imagine. So thank you very much. I'll check it out this way.
All righty. Best of luck to you, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I know we didn't have all the facts in that case, but if in fact that was an illegal unit, couldn't this gentleman actually get all his money back? Because you can't rent an illegal unit. It's not considered habitable under San Francisco and state law, I believe. So
I think you're right, David. There's statutes on point for these issues. And certainly if the place was deemed by the city to be an illegal unit, because we don't know if it is, but if it's deemed to be an illegal, illegal or unpermitted residential structure, then if it's not corrected within 35 days, then the landlord is not entitled to demand rent. So the flip side would be the tenant could sue for all rent from the inception of the tenancy. That would be the theory, because it was illegal that whole time, not just from the time that it's been cited, but from the time cited, the landlord can no longer collect rent going forward.
Yes. The problem on the other side is,
right,
he's now in a place that he's only paying $500 a month. And if he loses that unit, or if the city cites the landlord and says you can't be renting out that unit, and he loses that housing, where is he going to find another place in San Francisco for $500 a month? It's not a good situation. But
yeah, it's going to be tough.
And the question is the remedy worse than the disease?
Well, that sometimes happens in landlord-tenant law, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a risk. I will say this, though, in that regard, is that this, unless the city isn't going to automatically put a red tag on the illegal or unpermitted unit, if they don't put a red tag on it, then they're in essence not going to cause an eviction, and it will be the landlord's responsibility to either legalize the space or evict the tenant by whatever means they have that will not include the city. You know, DBI is not going to red tag it to assist the landlord in perfecting an eviction. You know, so.
And on the other side, maybe proceeding with a softer touch, getting them involved, starting the process, but this buys him time to find a better situation and get out of there. Hopefully there is a better situation for him. It doesn't sound like he's on a great path right now.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, that would be the best thing, ideally, would be for him to be able to relocate somewhere else. And then he wants to.
And Jessica, he may be able to relocate within the same property. He said that the landlord's family doesn't live there anymore. So perhaps he can move upstairs into one of the.
Exactly. Exactly. There's nothing illegal about renting a bedroom in a single family house. And that is exempt from rent control and all of that. But you can't rent out a garage, for example, and as a living space. That's not legal.
Or a storeroom.
Yeah.
Right. In San Francisco, under the rent control, their stance on renting bedrooms in a single family home is one, and you remain exempt from the local rent control and eviction control. But if you rent two bedrooms to different people, you know, you're collecting rent from more than one tenant, then it counts as a boarding house and it's under the jurisdiction of the rent board.
You know, one area we spoke of last time that we gathered, the three of us or the four of us, we spoke of what had been long feared, a great flood of evictions when some of these statewide eviction controls were no longer in effect. We're ways down the road now. We've had a time to take this out and kick the tires and really see what's going on with that. Has that great flood of evictions ever materialized?
No, not really. Not in San Francisco. Not like that. At least not to my experience.
Well, I mean, here on the peninsula where I practice, I'd say there's been certainly a big increase from the pandemic times, but I wouldn't call it a flood.
There's been a bit more. That is true, but a lot of the rent debt that is owed is COVID related still, and. The courts still require when it's COVID-related rent debt and you're looking to evict that, you know, you have to meet all of the COVID-related requirements. You know, there's extra forms to file. You have to try to get rental assistance and be able to document that it was denied or something like, you know, there's that going on. So as far as other evictions, not really that much.
Are we close
into it?
Are we close to the pre-COVID level yet?
Not to my knowledge.
And how about on the peninsula?
I would say not quite, but we're getting closer to it, yes. And also, I see a number of these remodeling, and I call it legitimate remodeling, where the landlord's ripping out the bathroom and the kitchen and putting in new kitchen and new bathroom, and they're doing a 60-day eviction. And the idea is they're upgrading the unit and they're hoping to greatly increase the rent by doing that. So I see a number of those, and I see a number of no pay evictions, but I wouldn't call it a flood, but certainly we saw none during the pandemic when there was a moratorium. So I'd say we're doing in my office, maybe 3 or 4 a week.
Which I'm sure is a lot lower than it was before the pandemic.
I don't know about that. It might be lower. It's still somewhat lower. Yes.
Yeah, I'm doing less as well, Jeff. The moratorium was pretty effective, you know, and so was the rent relief. I know that there's been some, you know, we talked earlier about rejections of COVID relief funds, but for the most part, in my experience, the funds were issued to the tenants for their rent. And that's me requesting it on behalf of the tenants and also assisting in requesting it on behalf of the landlords. The ones I've done, they've all got it. So when they're rejected, I don't know if they've been rejected because they didn't qualify or, you know, they were late. We talked earlier about these tenants that are being rejected, their rent relief are being rejected after their time to appeal. Well, that's not right. So there's a problem there that has to be dealt with. But in my experience over the past couple of years, the evictions have been much, much less. We're just finding other ways to deal with the problems, and it wasn't evictions. So
for the most part, have you all experienced that those applications for rental assistance that went through an attorney tend to be well prepared and are being granted, whereas those that folks represented themselves maybe didn't dot all the I's or cross the T's?
No, I'm not finding that. The overwhelming majority of our clients sort of do it themselves. A few very elderly clients we have, a couple who don't use email, and we do it for them in that case, but the majority do it themselves. What about you, Jessica?
Yeah, that's my experience too. Everybody is doing it themselves. The thing is to go back and check your emails, you know, especially if you're a lower income tenant and you had the email for that purpose. You should, if you can, go back and check, make sure that you're not receiving a rejection, because if you don't check that email and the time appeal expires, you can have a real problem. Although there's now litigation challenging that situation as well. So we'll see where that goes.
I'd like to give you each a minute and a half for any closing thoughts you have. Who would like to go first? David?
All right, sure. I think during the pandemic, the pendulum on evictions and recovery of rent swung way to the tenant's favor. And I think now the pendulum is starting to be a little bit more in the middle and fairer. Except in Alameda County, where I think it's still extremely unfair with the moratorium on all evictions. Hopefully it will get to the middle and stay there. That's my hope anyway.
Jessica?
Well, I just wanted to say that we needed to keep in mind that commercial evictions are also a potential, but there are no moratoriums or support for that. There are often grants that might be available for bars or restaurants that were forced to close for COVID-related rent issues. So that's a place to look into that. And I think that's about it. Just, touching on that as well. We tend to talk about the residential stuff a lot, not the commercial very much.
Sal Timpano, to you.
Yeah. So for those tenants, I would say for those tenants that are behind in their rent and that their non-payment of rent is due to COVID, they should probably pretty quickly contact an attorney. Or if they don't want to contact an attorney, they should contact their landlord. But I would strongly urge them to contact an attorney first and just have a consultation. You mentioned the San Francisco Bar. They could call that number. They could get a consultation. And the San Francisco Bar will consult, will provide consultations even for tenants outside of San Francisco. They'll assist in that regard, or they'll direct them to an agency within their jurisdiction. They should call and have that consult, because otherwise they're going to be facing eviction cases, because they're going to be coming. The eviction cases for these non-payment of rent cases are going to be coming. And it doesn't matter if there's 1,000 of them. It only matters if there's one and it's against you. So they should call right away.
And if you're in San Francisco or Marin counties, that number is 415-989-1616. If you're on the peninsula, the number for the San Mateo County Bar Association is 650-367-1890. If you are in Alameda County, the number for the Alameda County Bar Association is 510-302-2222. And I'm walking away from this with the perception that not only are the number of evictions down, but maybe a bit of a reset. Maybe people are finding better ways, and that's why the numbers haven't shot back up, finding better ways to resolve it. That's me thinking, hopefully the glass is half full. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area, where tonight we've been focusing on landlord-tenant law. Our guests have been landlord-tenant attorneys extraordinaire, Jessica Chilek and Salvatore Timpano of San Francisco, and David Finkelstein of San Mateo. Our final guest tonight has been all of you. Our show's been produced tonight by yours truly. Please be sure to join Your Legal Rights again next week, Wednesday at 6 p.m., where we will examine national law and politics, featuring David French, author of Divided We Fall, America's Secession Threat, and How to Restore Our Nation. Best of all, as always, we will take your calls and answer your questions. Again, a big thanks to tonight's guests. And back home at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.